Sportscast World Cup coverage on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. Sportscast World Cup coverage. Analyze and preview all the games of the World Cup here on the Sportscast. Sportscast World Cup coverage. And here's your host, Santiago Leal.
Hello, good morning, and welcome to the special edition of the Sportscast World Cup coverage. It's November 28th, 2022. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker, and if you're listening to any of your podcast directory, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can also visit us on our website, thesportscast.net, and also get our app, The Sportscast. USA, Iran, the game looms largely for the U.S. A win and you're in. Iran just needs a draw and they're in. And a lot going on in the World Cup. Surprises, of course, African teams and Asian teams going at it these past 24 hours. And join us all the way from the Pacific Coast, Asa Smith from Touchdowns and your podcast, Touchlines and Touchdowns Podcast. Welcome back.
Happy to be here. Unlike the U.S. men's national team, my social media and my content talk to each other. So we're in great shape.
We're in great shape. And you can look at our description, his link to all his links to his podcast and whatnot. So we'll be definitely check that out because he misses He matches with college football and the world football parallel-wise, and it's really great. A lot of surprises this past week in college football, but we don't have time for that today. USA, Iran, USA drew England 0-0. Iran, they beat Wales 2-0 in stoppage time. A lot going on behind the scenes as well, outside of the pitch, a lot of politics and all that. But anyways, your thoughts over this match tomorrow, Asa, and what have you concluded? What's going to happen?
Sure. So obviously the headlines right now are that Iran and America as nations are not super friendly. And I know that this is news to a lot of people. If you are closely paying attention to the last, 50 years of geopolitics, you might know that America and Iran don't always get along or ever get along. And this little like kerfuffle about social media, like the social media team of U.S. soccer just decided to like do this like mini protest where they took a symbol out of Iran's flag. So like Iran's flag has three colors, and then in the middle of their flag, they have a symbol for the Islamic Republic. And the American social media team just like sort of took it out as like sort of like a form of weird protest. Didn't ask the team, didn't ask the coach, didn't ask the State Department. Just completely going off the rails, which I got to tell you, on the one hand, I find incredibly funny because that means that there was some like 23-year-old social media manager who was like, what if I started a war today and just went with it? And I deeply, deeply appreciate that sense of confidence. But also it's created a situation where I think today Greg Berhalter was asked why he didn't ask Joe Biden about a certain like the location of a battleship in the Persian Gulf. And that's just crazy. Like that's just crazy town that we're talking about Greg Berhalter opining on geopolitics. Granted, he and the team have made comments about politics before. And so it's like, okay, well, you put yourself in a situation to talk about things. Like, it's really easy to say, hey, Iran should treat its people better. But apparently that's not something you need to say 24 to 48 hours before a do or die game. In terms of the game itself, it's sort of nice, actually. There's no goal differential. There's no what is Wales versus England. It's just winning in, losing out. And that are drawn out and it's straightforward. And I think that actually gives us collectively as American fans, actually a little bit of calm, because normally the way that Berhalter teams are successful is they're super defensive. even when they have the ball, they're doing so with an eye towards defense, an eye towards possession. So that's not an option. That's not an option today or tomorrow. So it'll just be, you know, balls to the wall. Let's go score some goals. And Iran is no pushover. Make no mistake. They are not a team that you can sort of walk all over. You can see Wales. You know, they're a good team. They're compact. They're coherent. They are very effective at that low block. But they can be broken down by players with quality. And I think that we have a couple of players who maybe can break them down. I don't know if you wanted to talk specifics, but
yeah. What changes? Obviously, the only changes that was brought we played against England was just the striker position, which we just put in Haji Wright for Josh Sargent. What changes would you make for this match against Iran tomorrow?
So I think that you need to look at what you're trying to do and how you're going to do it. Right. So the theory here is that you're going to be going up against the low block and you need to unlock it. So there are a couple of ways to do that. One is through having your best players on the field. Another is through having a coherent system. So that gives you two options, because Jesus Ferreira, who we have not seen, is probably Greg Berhalter's best option in his mind of connecting play, quick passes, one twos, you know, getting people out of position. But he's also the worst scorer of the three options. And then there is the Gio Reyna problem. Eric Wynalda, who you may or may not know, he's a former U.S. men's national team player.
Made a comment this morning.
Player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Concerning yeah. about that. Well, so go on. You know,
he said what he said, and I'm just repeating what he said. He said that the reason why Gio Reyna isn't playing is because Berhalter and him have personality issues. This is not surprising. Berhalter has rubbed the wrong way with certain players over the course of his tenure, most loudly John Brooks. And that pissing match needs to go away, because Gio Reyna is the guy who can win this game. Right? Like, you go through our players, who can unlock a defense, who can make things happen. And Gio Reyna is that guy. If it's not Gio, then you're going to really be hoping that Christian can dribble them or Jesus Ferreira can pass through them, because Tim Weah, as great as he is, he thrives on open space and there will be none. Brendan Aaronson relies on counter pressing. Iran don't want the ball. And our midfield, Musa, McKenney, and Adams, that's not really their strength. Their strength is transition. Their strength is athleticism. Their strength is, again, playing in space. There won't be any space in this game. So if you asked me what changes I would make, is I would actually still go with Sargent. I would go with Sargent still. And then I would put Gio Reyna in the midfield that he's never done, and I acknowledge that. I would put him in the midfield and sit down Wes. Because I don't think that this is a game for Weston McKennie or Yunus Musa. I mean, I don't really care which of those two. But the fact of the matter is that Tyler Adams can't come off the field. And our options beyond that are not real options. Like, you can't sit Dest, you can't sit Jedi, you can't sit either of the center backs. Christian's playing, and those are your options. So, we are about 13 players deep on this team. So there aren't so many options, and I'm sure that Berhalter's looking down the bench and thinking the same thing. The problem is that he's taken it from a 13 player team to a 12 player team by being in a pissing match with our most talented player, which I'll let you figure out whether or not that's a good thing or not.
Clint Dempsey was quoted yesterday. He said, "I think we need to get our best players on the pitch. To do that, I think putting Weah as the number 9 and bring in Aaronson." Your thoughts on that quote?
Yeah, cool. Do it. So the only problem is that, and again, it's a problem that a international manager should be able to deal with, is that to my knowledge, Tim Weah has never played as a single striker. So when he plays up top for his club team, he plays as part of a pair with Jonathan David of Canada, who you'll note did not make it out of the group stage. For all of Canada's chirping, nothing. For all of Mexico's chirping, they're in really bad shape. So, you know, CONCACAF, I think, needs to sort of check itself a little bit about how good we are and how much we're willing to talk crap. But I don't know that Tim Way has ever played as a single striker. I think you'd be actually better off putting Christian there because for Chelsea, he has played that central position by himself. Granted, there's an interchange there and how Chelsea plays it is a little bit different. But if you could get America to get these players to play in a situation where you're getting the ball centrally to Christian over and over and over again, I think that there's a lot of success to be had. And then you throw on Way as the left wing, Reyna as the right wing, Aaronson in the middle, in that sort of 10 role. I think that there's a lot of hay to be made, but Iran will hit you on transition. And if we're gonna go full force offense, then Tim Ream, Walker Zimmerman, and Tyler Adams have a huge job to do, which, hey, it's the World Cup. You got to do it, right? So I don't hate the idea. I don't think that it's ever been done. And putting players in a situation that they've never been in for the first time in a do or die game is like, it's a decision. It's a thought. But it's also not a video game. And look, Clint Dempsey knows more than me, but it reeks of fantasy football, video games. Well, so-and-so is a can play striker, so play him a striker. Like, it's not that simple.
Yes, and I want to reiterate what you said. I have been a proponent of putting Pulisic up top. I think that number nine question mark, it's just been like that for a while. And I think Pulisic, like you were saying, has been playing that position for his club, for the past year. So put him in the middle up top. I think that might be the best way for the U.S. I was listening to English radio this past week, and they were saying the U.S. midfield was solid and their defense has been solid. I think, would you agree that our midfield has been great for this World Cup?
So it's qualified, right? For America? Yes. Yes. Unequivocally, yes. Like, this is the best midfield we've ever had, and it's not even close. And they're able to do things that we've never seen before. The problem is that from a profile perspective, it's what are they great at and what are they trying to do? But, and look, part of this is the Berhalter system. I mean, I don't think that they're incapable of doing these things, but very little of our offense goes through the midfield. It's so much of it is reliant on our fullbacks getting it up to our wings and going from there. When the midfield gets the ball, it's usually something spectacular because it's so rare. So what do I think that I appreciate it, England, way to go. Thank you for acknowledging that we, won that midfield battle. But two, it's you're looking at the players and we don't have a player who can get the ball from Tim Ream's foot to our striker's foot. We don't have a midfield player who can do that. I don't think that we have a midfield player who can do that in our pool, which is like a larger conceptual issue. But how do I think that they've done? I think that they've done their jobs. There have been zero goals in open play. And our midfield's job number one under Berhalter has always been defensive. So if you're going to look at our team and say, okay, what is Tyler Adams' true job? He's been wildly successful at it. What is Weston McKennie's true job? What is Yunus Musa's true job? I think they've been successful. The problem is that Yunus and Wes have this responsibility to also progress the ball. And both of them have had flares and moments of brilliance. That spin move that Wes had in the first half against England was phenomenal. And Yunus's ability to just sort of turn on a dime and go is really, really useful. But in terms of sort of this Iran game and really going forward into the knockout rounds or the next tournaments or wherever their next steps are, the fact of the matter is that we do lack, everybody lacks a Kevin De Bruyne and Mateo Kovacic and Jorginho and whoever you want to call it, Casemiro. Everybody lacks that unless you have one, but we need one. And Tyler Adams, as much as I love him, will be the first to tell you that he's not that guy. He needs to be playing in a dual pivot with someone who can do that. And I don't know who that is. Maybe it's Gianluca Busio. Maybe it's Tanner Tessman. Maybe it's somebody I don't know. You know, but we don't have him on the roster. And so the way that we need to play is a little bit more fluid, which is a problem against a team in a low block. Again, this game against Iran is going to be frustrating. If you're not really a soccer watcher, and you're just sort of like watching the World Cup because the USA, be ready for this to be a frustrating as all get out game. Think Iowa versus Wisconsin at noon on a Saturday. Wisconsin basketball versus Virginia basketball, just miserable. Pistons versus Spurs in 2005, all the way down, just not fun. This game is not going to be fun, but I do think we can be successful. And I think that, you know, I think before that monologue, you asked me, what do I think is going to happen? And I do think we're going to pull it out, because ultimately I think that Berhalter hates offense. He deeply hates offense, but he also recognizes that if he does not get out of a group stage by scoring zero goals, you know, scoring one goal in three games, he's done, right? He knows he needs to go out there and get a win. So, you know, I'd rather lose 3-2 than draw 0-0. Go do it. Go do the thing.
And we'll have Ace's kind of predictions towards the end of the show. Looking forward to that. All right. So this morning we had Ghana beating Korea 3-2. We've been seeing the African teams kind of showing up since yesterday, I guess. Morocco beating Belgium, and of course Cameroon drawing with Serbia. But your thoughts over Ghana and beating Korea?
So I think that African nations, for some reason, are not well respected, and I don't know why. Because those teams are really good. Like if you wanted to go by traditional metrics, right? Like, what caliber of player does not play, you know, in those sides? You know, you look at Korea and you compare them to a Ghana. Like you go 1-1 or Cameroon or Tunisia or Morocco, and you go through it 1-1, and you say like, oh, do we have players of that quality? I remember, you know, you look at Morocco with a Hakim Ziyech, and you say like, why are we disrespecting Morocco? Morocco's good, right? It's not like Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Iran, where it's like, okay, they've got like one, maybe two players who you would consider good, but they're good because they're a team. And they play a ton together, and they understand each other. That's not it for the African countries. Like, some of the best players in the world play in Africa. Granted, they're not here because they're hurt. But, you know, I think anybody who would tell you that, like, the African nations are not in that second tier or third tier, however you want to put it, is not paying attention. You know, you have your first tier of teams who could conceivably win this tournament, right? France, Brazil, I guess Argentina, although they've looked like crap. It's not England, but you can put England in that group. And Germany forever, because that's how that works. Spain, I guess. But outside of those, like, sort of traditional powers, you get into that second tier of teams who are all sort of basically the same, right? Like, you get into like Croatia, Mexico, Serbia, you know, Ecuador, America, I would say. Right. In terms of, like, you know, those are the teams where you'd say, like, if America were to go up against a Morocco or a Ghana, we went up against Ghana like twice in two World Cups and lost both times. They are good. They are well drilled teams. And also, probably the most important thing about Morocco's win, because that's obviously the biggest one. I think it's the biggest win of the tournament. It's bigger. It is bigger than Saudi Arabia over Argentina, because Belgium was, I think, the number one ranked team in FIFA. You know, and look, part of that's bogus because, like, they're not the best team in FIFA. They're old as all get out. But the fact of the matter is that you watched a team, Morocco, a team that lost to America 3-0 in a friendly over the summer, just sort of be better. And so if you're sitting there saying like, oh, you know, names on the front of the shirt, Netherlands versus Egypt, right? To use two teams that aren't really at issue here. And you say, oh, well, one of them's European and one of them's African. I bet the European team's going to win. You're wrong. And you should keep an eye on these teams. Also, they're fun as hell. Like they're having way more fun than anybody else. And I'm a big proponent of fun.
Me too. As Asa said, Morocco beat Belgium 2-0 yesterday. A lot of these players play in quality clubs like Hakim Ziyech and Hakimi in PSG and a couple more out there. So beating Belgium, that has the best goalkeeper in the world, Courtois, I think, and the most expensive goalkeeper.
Certainly the most expensive.
Exactly. And then this morning, we also had Serbia tying Cameroon 3-3. Serbia was up 3-1. Mitrovic finally got his first goal. But you can't, you know, think being up 3-1, you're going to win this match. You got to play a full 90, right, Asa?
Yeah, I mean, it's like any other sport, right? Like, it's like double zeros. You play until double zeros. I guess in soccer, it's you play until 90 plus in this game, 14. but, you know, you have to – it's a weird sentiment to go into a World Cup and be disrespectful of your opponent. You see it in every sport, and it's human nature. You go up big, and it's just sort of like, all right, like let's just run out the clock here. But, you know, that's why I really appreciated Croatia against Canada. They, you know, they just kept going and kept sort of stepping on the neck. Not that I have any, like, deep appreciation for Croatian football. But you know, Canada got that early goal. They had a ton of confidence coming off of that Belgium game. And then they came out and Croatia just sort of methodically and slowly ripped them apart. And Serbia needs to, and I understand comparing Croatia and Serbia, I'm getting into another geopolitical thing.
It's okay.
I'm not all that interested in getting into like early to mid 90s geopolitics in the Balkans. If you want that, you can go elsewhere. I'm not really going to do it. But Serbia really should have won that game. And that's more a cultural thing, a team culture thing. Like you have to have the strength and the leadership in that side to just win the game. Right. So to make sure you see it out. But you know, I think that it was a fun game. I'll say that is that it's annoying that like the first like up and down fun game we got in like the World Cup happened at 5 a.m. Pacific or 2 a.m. Pacific or whatever.
Yeah. Depends where you're at.
Yeah.
Also yesterday, Spain drawing Germany 1-1. Germany's Nicolas Fulkrig from Werder Bremen scored last 10 minutes, 83rd minute. Good draw for Germany. You know, not expecting to beat Spain. Spain's a really good team, but Germany's still alive, you think?
Yeah, so that was the game of the tournament so far as I'm concerned. It was the first like true like heavyweight fight where you could like watch two teams really go at it. I don't think that Germany should have considered themselves an underdog. Spain is really good. Spain is really good. But so is Germany. And Nicolas Fulkrig, you'll note, American fans, that he is the guy who took the striker position from Josh Sargent at Werder Bremen like 3 years ago. And the reason why Josh Sargent now plays in England. He's good, as it turns out. And Germany and Spain, it was fun. It was just a fun heavyweight fight. And it does set up a very interesting last day in that group where Spain plays Japan and Germany plays somebody who lost to Spain 7-0. I don't know why I'm
Costa Rica. Blanking on.
Costa Rica, thank you. I watched that game. But so you have a situation where Germany must win and also has to win by like a certain amount in order to get past Japan. So it'll be interesting. Like I'm glad that the outcome happened to be fun. In terms of that game itself, it's so interesting and so fun watching like teams at the height of their powers. And this Spain team is not going to be at the height of their powers for a while. But their midfield of Pedri and Gavi, they're good. They're good, and they're young, and they're going to be doing this forever. And it's going to be super irritating for those of us who don't want just like the same teams to be good over and over again. But to put this in college football, they Ohio State wide receivered it, right? Like, they got rid of Chris Olave and got Marvin Harrison Jr. They got rid of Garrett Wilson, and it's Jackson Smith and Jigba. And you're just like, why is this thing that's happening? But Spain is absolutely become a favorite because of how they've played and their attackers playing the way that they have. Alvaro Morata got that goal and did so in like a replicable way. I thought Spain was going to get two or three, but ultimately they got a draw, and it'll be interesting to see on the last day of the tournament if Keylor Navas can shut down Germany, because he can do that. He didn't do it against Spain, but Keylor Navas is a very good keeper, and it'll be interesting to see what Spain's trying to do against Japan, right? Because a draw gets Spain through. But a draw also creates a situation whereby Germany and Japan and Costa Rica all have some measure of interesting potential outcomes. So it's a good day to watch. I think is that on Wednesday, Thursday?
It is going to be, let me tell you right now, because I got a wall chart right in front of me. Germany, that will be on Thursday. Yep. Thursday is the day to watch football.
Thursday, Wednesday, you know, whatever day of the week. It's the nice thing. I will say this is that it's like having this in November is weird, and I don't love it because there's like, because my attention is so sort of thoroughly elsewhere. But if you are a fan of sports, you need to understand that like this is like what people hope for. It's like every day there's four high level games over and over, back to back. It's like the NCAA tournament, but it's not just on the weekend. It's just constant, which is a blast. Like, even if you don't love it, if you appreciate sports, you can appreciate, like, right now you've got Switzerland versus Brazil, right? Like, just in the morning, you can just throw it on, and it's great.
Especially when you're working remote. And by the way, you mentioned Costa Rica. They are the only CONCACAF team with 3 points.
Yeah, not great showing from the Northwestern Hemisphere, right? Northern Hemisphere, Western Hemisphere. But I'll say this. Mexico getting thoroughly humiliated is worth it to me. If we don't go, like, as long as they don't go through, I'm okay if we don't go through. Because, like, I can't stand the chirping. But if we both suck, then, like, all right, we can deal with it.
Yeah, and Mexico might not get out of the group. We'll see what they do against Saudi Arabia on Wednesday. All right, predictions time. Right now, Brazil is playing with Switzerland. It's still 0-0. Who do you got for that match?
Brazil. Brazil is very good at soccer. So Switzerland is a good team. You know, like they're absolutely a top 15-ish side in the world. And they're as good as anybody. But I think Brazil, even without Neymar, who's hurt, I think they're very good at soccer. And I think that all things being equal, you should assume that they're going to win.
Yeah, Brazil has a deep bench. They can do it without Neymar, but we'll have to see if they do it. Portugal versus Uruguay. Uruguay tied the first match. Portugal won. Ghana 3-2. Who do you get for that one?
So I don't like to be super romantic about sports, right? Like I try to be like sort of objective and numbers based and whatever, but I'm not sure that something's not happening with Portugal right now, because they have looked terrible for years with Ronaldo up top. Players hate him. They don't want to play with him. I'm not going to play at the World Cup if he's there, these types of things. And then I don't know, his last ride, he's playing well. I don't know if there's not some cosmic force that's setting up a Portugal versus Argentina final, which would be great for the sports writers. But I think Uruguay is a better team than Portugal. And so I have to say that I think Uruguay is going to win. But I think that the most likely outcome is a draw, and then Uruguay has to go out and get a win on the last day in order to get through.
The draw it is. Okay. Ecuador, kind of, I'm not sure if I'm surprised, but they're doing great in this tournament. They beat Qatar in the first match. They drew against Netherlands, and Senegal had their first win against Qatar. Who do you got for that one?
So that game, I think that I'm going to go with Ecuador because I think Ecuador is ultimately the stronger side. Senegal got here on the back of a brilliant player who is not playing, right? And so Senegal has won a game against a bad Qatar team, right? Like Qatar's not good. And so I think that ultimately Ecuador is the stronger side. I think that Ecuador will get through, and I think that the I think that ultimately, you know, the Netherlands will smack Qatar, and those will be the two teams to get out, Netherlands and Ecuador.
First thing in the morning, now the games are going to shift a little bit later. There's no more early games. Wales versus England. What's going to happen there?
Nothing. I think that like Wales is going to try very hard to go out and get a win. And I think that they're not going to be able to. Ultimately, they would need to win by three, I think. I think they would need to win by three plus, or no. They would need to win by two and hope that Iran doesn't win by more than three or something. The goal differential numbers are annoying. But basically, I think Wales needs to win by like three. And I don't think that they are capable of scoring three goals, let alone winning by three. So I think it's going to be a whole bunch of Gareth Southgate telling his guys, like, it doesn't matter, sit back. And ultimately, I think they'll win because of just the difference in quality. You can only rely on so many special moments from Gareth Bale. The rest of that team is not very strong.
Then the biggest match of Tuesday, Iran versus USA. Final prediction, Mr. Asa Smith.
You know, I said this to somebody recently about how optimism and realism interact as a sports fan, right? And what I said is that if you're realistic, you have to deal with the reality of the situation both before, during, and after the game. If you're optimistic before the game, you're in a great mood because you think your team's going to win and you're just much happier. So I'm going to be blindly optimistic in the face of all realism and say America 2, Iran 0, including a early goal to make the nerves go away. I think it's going to be a party. I think it's going to be great. But if you ask me, like, realistically, I think it's going to be a slog and miserable and awful. And it will gut out a 1-0 win on an 83rd minute set piece because that's how we do things under Berhalter.
It will be ugly. A lot of the pundits are saying USA needs to score early just to get things a little bit more comfortable on their end. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern, USA, Iran. You can watch it on Fox or Telemundo. It's going to be exciting. We'll see what lineups are going to be changed. Or might be the same. We'll find out. You never know with GB Berhalter. Asa, what is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about what is the best thing to eat during the USA versus Iran match?
So at TLSTDS on Twitter, that's basically where we're most active. The best thing to eat is actually, you know, I have been sort of toying this over in my head, and I think ultimately what I'm going to do is I have some leftover rice, like white rice that I made last night, and I'm just like I'm sort of thinking about it and. I think Tuesday is going to be a fried rice day. I think I've got some chicken. I got some peppers, onions, garlic. If you want my fried rice recipe, I can do that as well. But I think it's going to be a fried rice day for me. I think in general, if you were going to have something like a specific dish, tadbig, which is a Persian rice dish, is very good. So that is that our kofta, tadbig and kofta. That's what I'm going to say. That's what you should go get. Go to your local Persian restaurant if you have one. There are a number in Beverly Hills, California. Tadbig and kofta. That's what I'm gonna say.
There you have it. You can definitely reach him on Twitter for the recipe on that. You can reach us on the sportscast.net or on the Sportscast One on Twitter and Instagram. And tomorrow, Tuesday, after the match, we'll have Hal Phillips to recap Iran versus USA. Hopefully, it'll be a very positive recap, but I cannot guarantee you on that. Anyways, it's been a great World Cup so far. It's been a week. My favorite is France to win it. I've changed. I think that curse is going to be uncursed. Who's your favorite so far, Asa?
You know, I'm still rolling with Argentina just because I want them to. Like, I want Messi to go out with a World Cup. And I want him to retire immediately afterwards. Like, I want him to just be done. I don't want him to go play the last 3 years of his career in Miami. Like, I don't... Him being at PSG even in the first place is annoying. Like, I want him to go raise the World Cup and just be like, adios, I'll see you never. Because, like, he's like, you can just go retire to wherever he wants. You know, whether that's in Argentina or Barcelona or Fiji. Like, I want that for him because he seems like a good dude. I actually think that Brazil is going to win because I think that there's no team in the world who can go toe-to-toe with them for talent. And that's how I see it. But France is good. Spain's good. Could be any of them. I don't know.
It could be anyone. Or it could be a dark horse like Croatia again.
I deeply doubt that. I think that the shutdown forecast says about Bedlam, right? Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State. Anything could happen in Bedlam. Oklahoma could win by a lot. Oklahoma could win by a little. Those are your options. Like, and in the World Cup, it's like anybody could win. It could be France, it could be Spain, it could be Brazil, it could be Argentina. That's basically it. England's not going to win. I'm gonna give you just everybody. Just like if you're wondering, it's not going to be England. England never wins. They're terrible.
There you have it. Love the college football parallels here. Anyways, we got to run. We're going to see what happens with Brazil, Switzerland. Asa, I appreciate you coming on to the Sportscast.
Thanks for having me. See you next week.